And I watched them pile on the couch under, like, with blankets and pick a show. And I'm like, this is it. Like, right? Did they come in bickering? Did they bicker 30 minutes later? Yes. And those moments of seeing them be in relationship with one another, to see them like enjoying one another's company, this is the good life. And I don't want to be so focused on what is next that I miss those moments.
Welcome to the magic table.
Something just happens when people sit down together. They get comfortable, time disappears, and that's when people actually start talking.
That's what we're here for, real conversations, the kind you don't want to end.
So pull up a chair and sit down with us at the magic table.
Well, so glad you're joining us once again at the magic table. It's good to be here. The magic table, it's been a minute. We're doing a little bit of a rebrand, trying to bring back a little bit more magic table. But the idea of the magic table is just, it's a place where we can kind of talk and have conversations and process things and all of that. Anything to add to that?
No.
No? Okay. Okay. Well, as we were kind of processing what we even should be talking about, we got into this idea of the good life, right? And I think the idea is that, like, we all want to live the good life, right? Like, kind of pursuing the good life. And at the same time, nobody knows what the good life actually means. So I guess it gets complicated to pursue something, but not actually know what it means. Is that fair?
I think that's fair.
Okay. So how do we, let's start the idea of the good life. What do we think we mean when we say the good life?
I mean, I think there's a piece of it that's just like comfort and ease and goodness.
Yeah.
And like, it feels like it should be really simple. And I think the longer I live, like, the less simple that it seems, or orienting myself to what it actually is, maybe is the harder part.
Yeah. Where does this notion of the good life come from? I wonder, like, where do we get this? Like, our kids, I mean, we're starting to see this as teenagers, this forming a little bit. I mean, do our younger, like, have we seen this in our kids up to this point? Like, their pursuit of the good life? Is it like innate? Like, almost from the time you can walk, you're pursuing the good life?
It's a great question that I wasn't prepared for. But I think at least our oldest two, are at this place of seeing different friends and those friends' families pursuing different things.
Yeah.
And we are having more and more and more conversations about what matters to our family. How do we have grace for what other families are pursuing? And how do we continue to orient to what we, as the Blandfords, value?
Yeah, so it's a value thing, right? The good life. Yeah. I mean, the good life and your values correspond to one another to some extent. It's not always a one-for-one correlation. We may have values that we don't pursue as well as we should sometimes, right? Yeah. Like these values we want to do but don't do them. But I guess as I was sort of talking to you about this, I think the good life gets sold to us a lot of times these days. And what I mean by that is, like, every product that's out there, what they're causing you to do is be like, you know what? I could have the good life if I just had that.
Yeah.
Right? And so we just get trapped in this, like, striving, you know what I mean? It's just like, whatever that next thing is out there is like the good, that's going to finally get me to be the good life. It's that toy. It's that person that, you know, if you're in a dating relationship, it's that, I don't know. Yeah.
But I even think it's that milestone. Like, when my kids get to this place, life will be good. If my child makes this elite team, or my kid excels in this activity, we will have, like, made it.
Or vacation.
Yes.
Like if I could just get to Cabo this summer, like then my life would be complete. And the thing about it is none of those things are bad. Like those are all pretty good things to be pursuing a lot of times. Like the things that we're pursuing in seeking the good life are not bad things necessarily. But is it that the way we pursue them, like, can turn them almost negatively? Like having so much hope in these things is what actually causes them to actually be negative for us? Is that, am I?
I'm tracking with you. I don't know if anybody else is.
Am I going somewhere? Okay. Yeah. I don't know how to kind of think about all of that because like we're all seeking something, right? And I like, yeah, the words are not coming to me necessarily.
Okay.
But what is the good life? We're all seeking the good life, but no, like we don't know what it is.
Right. But I think it's ease. It's comfort.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it's a level of success that then provides those things to us. And I think, again, those things are not innately bad. And yet what happens when the vision of your, what you hoped life to be is different than what your life actually is?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause all this striving and all this like kind of keeping up, right? Once you get to that next thing, whatever it is, it's like, oh, if I could just kind of get here, you get there and it's like, oh, there's the next there. And right. And so we get on this kind of hamster wheel, I guess, of always finding the next there.
Or we are so consumed by what is next that we miss that we're actually living it in the moment.
Yeah.
So like my life goal is to be the house, right? I want to be the place that our kids' friends come. Like I grew up in the house and that is what I want for our kids.
Right.
And so this week or last week, I came out of session. There were like 4 or 5 extra kids here. It was so loud. It was a little bit smelly. And they
It was a lot of bit smelly.
Middle school boys. Man, it's a whole being outside and then coming inside. It's a whole vibe. But they just like ravage the pantry. And I walked out of a full day of work and was like, what is happening? And I feel like you reminded me, like, this is what you've prayed for. This is what you've hoped for. This is what, like, you have worked to create. And I think so often we spend so much time, like, trying to get to the place that when we're actually there, we miss it. Mm. Like, that is what I've longed for. That I love that these boys come to our house and eat all of our food because they feel comfortable and safe here. And yet, after a full day of work, when I, you know, walk out of my office, I'm like, what is happening? And I needed you in that moment to remind me, like, hey, this is actually what we've been working towards. This is what we've hoped for. And I think sometimes in the chaos of, like, what our lives actually are, we miss that we're living the good life.
Yeah. Yeah. So what if the good life is really simple and it's just being content with what you have today? What if that's the whole secret?
Yeah.
I mean, if you could live a life of like truly just being content day in and day out, and not in a way where it's like, it's fine, not in a platitude kind of way. Because we get into the platitudes and it's like, oh, God's got this. It's totally fine. Everything's going to be okay. Because I do this to myself all the time. I live that platitude life, you know, but not in a platitude way, in a legit, like, I am content with where I am at right now. And like, I'm living in the presence. What if that is actually the good life? And our society spends all of its time doing the exact opposite of that. It's future focused and it's past focused. And God's calling us to be now focused. That's why they call it the presence. Present. Yeah.
You're such a dork.
A little Kung Fu Panda quote for you. You're welcome. But yeah, what if it's like right now?
And I think that's so hard for us to be present to like our actual life. We were talking before we got on mic. Like, you preached a sermon. I don't even remember when it was. And it's really annoying to me when your husband preaches a sermon that is like for you and other people appreciate, but like, I've heard you preach probably hundreds of times by this point.
Gotta be close. Yeah.
I'm sure they're all great. This is the one I remember. They're all
bangers, as the kids would say. Yeah.
But like, it was this sermon where you talked about daily bread and the Lord's Prayer and like the daily bread, but it was actually manna.
Yeah.
It wasn't daily bread. You've also preached that sermon.
Well, that came into play in that sermon. It was taking the manna and talking about how the Lord's Prayer and daily bread and all that stuff sort of comes, it all collides. It's
because all it is that like daily dependence on God and who he is and his provision. And in that sermon, you talked about so many of us want like a vault full of bread.
It'd be great.
To be dependent on.
I want to see that vault, right? Yes. I'd love to just have that there. I'd feel a lot safer if I could just have that vault of bread just where I could see it.
Yes.
You know?
And it's like so annoying because this was over a year ago at least that you preached. And that I continue to go back to, my posture isn't daily bread, daily provision. I am always thinking like, thank you for that. Here is the next need. And I think when we are operating in that place, it is hard to be content in our actual life and to see the goodness that it holds.
Yeah, the problem with preaching is that you're usually preaching to yourself. So anytime I talk about daily bread, it's because I really struggle with that concept. But I think we all struggle with that concept. I think that is a very difficult thing for us. And I think our culture is particularly set up to force us to struggle with that. That's how you get people to buy products, is to force discontentment on them.
Yeah.
By showing them how their life could be so much better if they just had A, B, and C, you know? And so everything in our life is oriented around that, that need. And so, I don't know. It's so nerdy. I always go back to Lord of the Rings. That was my COVID project. I read through Lord of the Rings. But like the hobbits, man, it's like the hobbits were the real heroes of that whole story. Both literally, because they were the only ones that were able to bear the ring. But they just like knew how to like hang out and party. Like the Shire was kind of like all that they needed. You know, they weren't out like these other like warriors, the sons of man kind of being out there and fighting wars against these warlocks and all this like action. Like they just like hung out and like drank and ate really well and just like hung out with each other, you know, in community. And they were content. They were okay with where things were. And they were the only ones who were able to bear the power of the ring, not to spoil it for you, because of that contentment. It was those who had power, who had ability to have power, that were corrupted by that power. It was those who did not, that were content, that were not corrupted by the power. And so like, I just keep going back to this idea of like, be a hobbit. Like, how can we just be more hobbit-like? You know, I know it's a silly thing to think about. And I think all of this kind of comes at a time where, like, I've been really struggling, like, in a lot of different places in my own life that we've talked about a lot. Like, work is complicated, and I'm, you know, I just keep wondering, like, did I miss it? Like, am I doing the right thing? Like, should I be striving for more? Do I need to be, like, you know, doing other things? You know, am I where God really wants me to be? I have a whole podcast around this whole idea, and I suck at it. You know, I'm like the worst, or I feel frustrated by it. And so I guess I'll put it to you, like, how do you be more present? Like, how do we become more people of more contentment?
I mean, I think there's a lot of ways we do that. I think we start by noticing, where is the goodness? Where is the beauty in the life that I'm actually living?
Yeah, that's good.
I think we're in this place, like, our oldest has 2 more years of high school. And that does something to you as a parent of just, and I do want to be clear as we're talking about, you know, contentment and all the things. I don't believe we are counting down our 18 summers with our children. Like,
yeah,
I'm about to turn 43.
Yeah, that's correct.
And we still go to my parents' house and swim and hang out. And, like, I think, but those are the places that I think even the world teaches us discontentment. You have 18 summers with your kid.
And people think that they're helping you.
Yes. And it's a lie.
100%.
Right? I'm a 43, almost 43 year old person who still goes to my parents' house. Like, they still.
Yeah.
And so to perpetuate this lie of, you have 18 summers, you better figure it all out.
You got to soak it all in. You need to
do all the things. And so I think
so much pressure.
We are attuned to the season that we're in. Like, we are in a season that being with our kids is delightful. Every moment, no. Mm-hmm. Like, they're human just like we are. They fight, they bicker. Sometimes they drive me bananas. And, like, I like being with them. Mm-hmm. I like sharing a meal around a table with them. I like hearing their perspective on the world and people and all the things. And I think it would be really easy to say, we have 2 years left. How are we applying for scholarships? How are we looking at colleges? How are we? And those things are important. And I don't want to be so future focused that I miss, like, the goodness of where we are. Our kids today, we are like every other family. We are trying to navigate summer. What are the boundaries and parameters and all the things? So based on ages and interest, our kids struggle to agree on basically anything.
Yep. I think that's everybody, though. Everybody has their own screen now.
Yes.
Right?
So one of our parameters for summer is, if the three of you can agree on a show, a movie.
If you're watching the same screen at the same time.
Yes. You can have unlimited screen time. This was actually your idea.
Thank you.
I will give you full credit.
I appreciate that. I'll take it.
And today, our kids came home from hanging out with my parents and were like, hey, if we can all agree, we can watch a show together. And I watched them pile on the couch under, like, with blankets and pick a show. And I'm like, this is it. Like, right? Did they come in bickering? Did they bicker 30 minutes later? Yes. And those moments of seeing them be in relationship with one another, to see them, like, enjoying one another's company, this is the good life. And I don't want to be so focused on what is next that I miss those moments.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I do. I so struggle with how people make you feel bad and like that you can't ever have enough time with them. And like, you've got to soak it all in, which is all very true. And it like it perpetuates this like fear almost in us where it's like, oh my gosh, am I doing things perfectly right now in order to set up the whole future? And it's like, guys, it's really not that complicated. What if you just like all piled on the couch and watched a show together? Like, you know, that would be amazing. How about that? Yeah, that is such a good word. I think probably everybody who may be listening to this probably knows, like, yes, what they're saying is true, because we all have these experiences. We all have very similar experiences. Accomplishing these things though feels impossible sometimes. And like actually being content, you know, there's the phones constantly reminding us of what we don't have. I mean, that's the whole point of social media, really, is to show you how everybody else has something that you don't have in a lot of ways. Relationships, you know, I think about sometimes like, should I post this because I'm like with this person, but would this other person be kind of like jealous that like I'm with this person? Or, you know, am I showing too much of like, it's like, for real, like, why can't we just like live life? You know what I'm saying?
For sure.
Yeah. Here's something I want to throw at you.
Great.
You ready for this?
No. Nope.
No, it's not bad. It's not bad at all. What if Sabbath?
I was literally thinking about Sabbath. We're such weirdos.
I think it's the antidote to a lot of this stuff. And I've been talking about how I want to like get, we've practiced Sabbath 8 years.
Seven. We started in 2019.
Okay. 7 years. And like we go in and I mean, there's an ebb and a flow. I feel like we do a good job of keeping it sort of sacred and like set apart, but I don't always personally do a great job of like staying away from my phone. You know, it's like, I can play a little game on my phone. It's like 3 hours later, you know, sort of deal. And I'm feeling this need to like, maybe come back to like an actual Sabbath, you know, where like no one can get a hold of me, you know, no one really needs me, on a Sabbath, in general. And there's intentionality. There's a reason that the Sabbath is part of the Ten Commandments. I mean, this is foundational to like God's people in the Old Testament. It's foundational, so much so that the reason you don't see it as much in the New Testament is because it was just a given. Like they didn't have to talk about Sabbath just the same way they didn't have to talk about community, because they practiced the Sabbath. It was part of their culture and they were a communal people. And we enter the Bible with our own sort of like Western eyes and we're like, oh, they don't talk about community that often. It must not be that big of a deal. It was a given for them. They don't have to talk about community. They also don't talk about Sabbath because it was a given for them. This is how they lived their lives. So they don't have to talk about the need to kind of change the way that they live in order to do Sabbath. But we do. Our culture is fundamentally opposed to Sabbath because we are, say it with me, striving. And we can't stop.
Yeah.
Is that?
I mean, I think you're right. And I do think Sabbath is this place of rest and reorienting. And I mean, we're at the place in parenting that our oldest is talking about, how will I Sabbath in college?
I love like, that conversation.
I love that conversation too, because she's also our kid that will be like, I can't do that. I'm Sabbathing.
Yeah, she does not struggle with boundaries. That is for sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
And so I think there are these places too of like, how are we holding the aspirational goals, what we hope to teach and learn and be, versus acknowledging like God's kindness to us, that like we have worked really hard to create a family dynamic that our children enjoy being with us. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I'm like, can you enjoy talking to me less?
We have a couple of external processors, you know, verbal processors, right? That need to constantly be talking. They get that from somebody in the family. I'm not sure.
Not you.
Not me.
Yeah. Not you. And so how are we being intentional even to notice, like, this is the goodness of God in this season versus this hopefulness? And again, it takes me back to manna. Like, how am I noticing God's presence and kindness here instead of this, okay, thank you for that. Here's my next list of things that I want you to do and accomplish.
Yeah. Because you know what is never going to be done? The work. It's never done. You can always be doing something. Always, always, always. And Sabbath is an intentional acknowledgement that it does not depend on you at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I think our culture desperately needs Sabbath.
I mean, let's like start in the church.
I guess by our culture, I meant specifically the church.
And like, how are we intentionally resting, saying, God has me? Like, again, to me, this is the good life. I trust God's provision and kindness towards me, that I don't have to strive in the way I'm seeing other people strive. And I think sometimes we strive in a way of, thank you, God, for what you're trying to provide. Let me put you to the side. I've got this piece. And I think we've practiced, right? So we practiced Sabbath for 7 years. And what amazes me is we don't have it figured out.
I'm a noob.
Right? Like 100%. At this point, we are still like, your kids get to different seasons. They have different activities. Like, how are we bringing Sabbath to where our family is in this point in time?
Yeah, it's complicated. I was just having a conversation with Adrian, our friend, over coffee this week, and we were just talking about Ecclesiastes and sort of this like idea, it's meaningless, you know, it's meaningless. And like Solomon like teaches us this lesson, you know, throughout scripture, we see this lesson taught over and over again, that it's all meaningless. And then we go out and we strive, you know, and we think that it all depends on us. And, I really do think it's the water we swim in. We don't know how to not do that sort of thing and need a complete reorientation. I don't mean like all y'all need a reorientation. I mean,
we need a reorientation.
Yeah. That's a hard thing to realize, that you keep needing to learn the same lesson over and over again, you know? Do you have thoughts on like kind of ways to find though contentment? I mean, Sabbath is obviously one of those, like a practice that you can be doing. Do you have thoughts on like what else you would, you know, some advice you'd give to somebody?
I mean, I think part of it is being attuned to your actual season, right? It's that like, how am I practicing gratitude for what I have in this moment versus that like what I'm hoping for in the next season? How am I entering into community with people who will orient me back to this truth that God's provision is sufficient and I don't need to strive? Like, I think when we get in that place of this is on me, it becomes individualized and we lose that communal piece of it. How are we proactively entering into community in a way that says like, hey, you're a part of like a body of believers who will support you. This isn't all on you.
Oh, that's good.
And I think this contentment piece or the good life we believe is dependent on us. And when I feel like I'm in a place of acknowledging the goodness of our life, it's when I'm acknowledging the community that we are a part of. It's the being with people. It's being with our children. It's me and you being together. Like, I think when we move from that like hyper focus of individual, this is my call, what I'm trying to do, versus the communal piece, it shifts it.
Yeah. Almost like community is important. It's crazy.
Almost like community is important.
It's wild. Yeah. I think that's good. I think that's really helpful. I mean, we live in a loneliness. There's a loneliness epidemic, yeah. You know, and just we are lonely people and getting lonelier and turning to technology in order to make, you know, mm-hmm. soothe that yeah. in really inappropriate ways, like ways that are just not meant to be, you know. And so we get further away from people, and our kids get further away from people, and we teach our kids to get further away from people, and we exacerbate this culture of kind of loneliness. And because of that, the only way we know how to kind of soothe those things is striving and, you know, looking like we have all of our stuff together, and we don't.
Yeah.
You don't have your stuff together. I don't have my stuff together. None of y'all have your stuff together. Yeah. And I think the quicker we could kind of figure that out, the better off we'd be.
Well, you know. Or just acknowledge, like, we don't have to have it all together.
100%.
And I can be content without having everything perfect. And there's freedom in that.
That's a word. It's a word. I say we leave it there. We can come back to this. I'd love to hear what the people think, though, about that, about contentment. I think there'll probably be a little more conversation coming about that. Other than that, though, we killed it. We nailed it.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for joining us at the magic table. We'll see you next time.